in this great scripture of mankind, Lord has been explaining Arjuna that how one should understand, determine the ultimate purpose of life and how one should approach it, how to realize it, how to experience it. Both the theory and practice is very beautifully detailed in various ways, and we have seen by the end of the 14th chapter that Arjuna was explained that one has to go beyond the changing. The changing has immense variety, but it is caused by the combination of what is called three gunas, the sattva, rajas and tamas, which were characterized by the sattva, by the calmness and propensity for knowledge, rajas by desires and activity coming due to those desires, and tamas was characterized as ignorance causing the terrible laziness and inactivity, because there was no determination also as to what activity to undertake. So it is total confusion, state of tremendous confusion, and that became then the tamas. All of us and everything in this universe has these three constituents, and the different permutations, combinations of these three make for the variety in this universe. So therefore one has to transcend these three gunas. Gunas also means the bondages or the ropes. In Sanskrit this word guna has multiple meanings. One of them is quality, another is that a particular nature of a thing, and another is a rope that binds. So actually if we see a little deep, we will see that all these three meanings are really intertwined. I'm not going into the details of that right now, but you can think about it. And one has therefore to learn to see the nature of the self unchanging. And this self has really percolated the whole existence, the existence of the universe. The illusory I and mind that dance on this reality, that is actually pervaded by this one absolute existence. And in a secondary sense, therefore, it is cause of this entire universe. Just as the ocean is cause of these waves, not in the sense that ocean gets transformed into waves, but the waves are appearances on the ocean, and the waves change, sometimes big, sometimes small, sometimes it is very turbulent sea, sometimes it is quite calm. So therefore, while those appearances keep on continuously shifting, the ocean is always there as the ultimate substratum, unchanging, ever present, and in this sense a cause. So therefore one has to see these waves as the outcome or the result of this ocean. Although In the ultimate sense, there is no cause and effect involved there. Yet, in a secondary sense, there is this cause and effect. The waves do not have an independent existence. They are dependent on the ocean, and in that sense, this ocean becomes a cause of the this whole universe. And thus, the whole idea is to turn our minds to the unchanging reality of the indwelling self. The indwelling self is the supreme reality, which never changes, which is always there, never becomes non-existent. The other things are appearances, and therefore, even when they appear to be real, they truly never exist. And because the existence is a reflected quality there, it is not its true quality. It is, if you see the flower, for example, you hold the flower in front of the mirror and you will see the reflection of that flower in the mirror. Now, is the flower in the mirror or not? Is the existence of flower in the mirror or not? It certainly is perceived at that time, and it is perceived but not fully again. That is another important thing to note. For example, while you can see the flower in the mirror, if you say, for example, if you have a nice fragrant rose in your hand, if you go and put your nose to the mirror, you will not get the fragrance. So it is not the real rose. You cannot fool a bee with that reflection. It appears there, but actually it is not there. Moreover, if you take it away from the mirror, it is lost in the mirror too. So the existence of flower in the mirror was, you conclude, was not real. The flower, actual flower, is the cause of that reflected existence. This is just an analogy, don't stretch it too far. And the idea is that our true self, our self, is the result of all this universe. It is the cause of all this universe. The whole universe results from this self alone. When there is not awareness of the self, the awareness of universe also vanishes. Just see the concomitance of the self and the universe. When the state of your perception of the self changes, the nature of the universe perceived, that also changes. The whole thing arises, stays and subsides in the self alone, and therefore that self, which is untouched by the time, space and causation, is therefore the true reality. And Lord is now in this chapter, which is, as I told last time, is considered the single most important chapter in Bhagavad Gita, in fact in the whole Vedantic literature. This 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita assumes tremendous importance, unparalleled importance, for all, for the those who are followers of the path of knowledge. They also look upon this chapter as a great source of inspiration and guidance. So also those who follow the path of devotion, they too consider this chapter as the veritable image of the divine. This is therefore called Purushottama Yoga. This Purushottama means this self, Uttama means the supreme, and Purusha is the one who resides in this city of the body. That body is like a city, and the indweller there in the city is has to have some indwellers there. So this city has the indweller. That indweller has different stages, but the supreme state of that indweller is now being indicated here, and that is shown as the substratum source and also the ultimate ultimate thing where it all dissolves. So therefore that is real. The whole idea is our attention, which is just drawn by the variety in this universe, which keeps on dragging us. That has to stop, and the concentration should come on this self. From unreal, we should learn to take our mind to real. And that is a bit difficult task, requires a lot of concentration, repeated attempts at deeper and deeper assimilation of this truth. It should percolate inside. I gave many times the analogy of that Indian sweet, rasagulla. So you keep it dipped in the syrup. It is a sweet. So it is that milk cheese ball is to be dipped into that syrup, so that the syrup gets percolated in every particle of that cheese ball. If you just keep dip it and take it out, then what happens? A little syrup is sticks on the outer side. Nothing, the inside doesn't stay sweet. It doesn't go deep. So also this knowledge has to seep inside, and therefore it requires repeated understanding from all different angles and staying with that knowledge. This chapter is also tremendously poetic. The 15th chapter is where we see the beautiful analogy of a huge tree, a huge banyan like tree called Ashwath. Actually, in the Sanskrit word is Ashwath. You can see all these wood carvings here, they are actually leaves. Each of them is leaf of that Ashwath tree. It is because of this mentions in the scriptures, this has assumed a very holy significance, that if you look at these leaves, you will remember the scriptural lines that whole universe is like this big tree. So, and from the tree, you, although you see many other things, look at the source of the tree. That is how Lord begins by describing this tree. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Urdhumulamadhashakham Ashwatham Prahuravyayam Chandasi Yasya Parinani Yastan Vedasya Vedavet. They speak, the Blessed Lord said, they speak of the immutable Ashwatha tree, which root with its root above and branches below, whose leaves are the Vedas, he who knows it is a knower of the Vedas. This tree is described as the one which in our common understanding upside down tree. The root is up above and the branches they have grown down here. It is seen like that, we see it that the roots go down, the branches and all they come up. But this tree is peculiar, this whole universe is like that tree coming from the divine. That divine which is prone to creation. And the creation is about to now happen. That proneness for creation is there because of a shade of ignorance. The shade of the ignorance where there is the propensity of I. Just the little bit of I vibration and then that much creation comes about. So there is the absolute self, there is no possibility of any creation there. There is no universe, no I am mine. But when there is a state where it is like a state of a seed, where there is the propensity for creation, propensity to manifest, there are that something is going on inside the seed. It is vibrating to manifest. That state is described as the source of this whole universe, where they actually with Lord there is nothing happening, no creation is taking place. But with that ignorance there is this divide, this state comes where there is ignorance, a vibrating I and the world. That wherever there is a vibration of I, the vibration of world also comes. It is a vibration. That the supreme I is without any vibration. It is all pervading. It is the self beyond time, space and any idea of creation. But then this what we see as universe, how does it come? You go back and see the source as I and the world. This subtle feeling, very sublime feeling, I and the world, it comes. You can observe it when you are about to wake up from deep sleep. Then, oh I, world. And then whatever level that I is, the creation of that level manifests through that as its counterpart, as its expression. From that I, this world manifests. That is the root. So, and that root is above, means it is connected. That root is connected to the ultimate divine experience. Above has a sense of no superior for us. When something is higher, we think that that is better. So that is why the word above has been used. That evolution, for example, means becoming better. So we have to, as we go towards that source, we become, so to say, better. We manifest more and more of our divine nature, and therefore the word above has a psychological significance. It is not logically there is no above or below as such, but the purpose of telling this the root is above indicates that we think that above is better, going above. We show also that God high up there. So therefore it is shown like this, that this tree is all manifested. And how is this? That the branches, they are all spreading down. And then how is this avyayam? Means it is indestructible as such. It is, it is always there. It is, there is no time when it was not there. When the time dissolves, it also dissolves. But you cannot say a specific time when this universe was not. It is, in time it always is, in different forms. Maybe millions of years ago, we did not have human beings living like this. They were probably in different dwelling, different forms. And then maybe billions of years ago, this solar system was not like this. There were some different these things there. There were differences at that time. But as when we are caught in the sense of time, this universe is also there. So in that sense, it is called that immutable. It is always there, avyaya. It doesn't go away, and that is also therefore a law that is the basis of our physical sciences, that nothing is destroyed, nothing is created. It is in time, it is always there, and therefore it is in different forms, only the forms change. So this tree is always there, the tree of universe. But, and then it is called Ashwattham. Why this particular tree has been chosen to give analogy? Shankaracharya comments that it doesn't stay unchanging even for a little while. It is continuously changing. These particular leaves of this tree, they are drooping with the leaves going down with the stem, and so the leaves are always in motion. It is, you won't find the leaves of this tree this without movement. It is a constant change, which is the nature of this universe, continuous change. And this is therefore that analogous to this tree. And next it is said that Chandamsi Yasya Parinami, the leaves are the scriptures or the Vedas, which protect it. Means the scriptures, they provide the protection, the nurture, the nourishment, the knowledge that is contained in the scriptures, they provide nourishment, and therefore they are like the leaves. Like the leaves provide nourishment to the tree, the scriptures, they provide nourishment to this tree. And it is, the next part is very important. Yastam Vedasya Vedavit. The one who knows this and knows completely the nature of reality. This knowledge is the supreme knowledge. The knowledge of the whole universe. It is not just knowledge of a part. In sciences, what we see is the knowledge of the part. somebody has a lot of knowledge of biology, somebody has the technical knowledge of say how to make certain machines and so forth. They are partial knowledges which are again continuously changing. Nothing in that is permanent. That knowledge also comes and goes. It is an empirical thing. Therefore, the scientists use the word empirical. Very good that Brown professor who had come to deliver the Universal Brotherhood Day lecture, therefore pointed out this feature of science very well, that in science you can never prove anything. I was really jolted by that sentence, that in science you cannot prove anything, because it is empirical, based on the data that you collect. In future, there is always a possibility that some information, some new data will come and it will disprove. So in science you can disprove, but you can never prove anything. So a beautiful idea that Swami Vivekananda speaks of, this idea that science only indicates the probability and cannot say anything as proof. There is no idea of proof in empirical science. It only indicates an overwhelming possibility that so far as our data goes, whatever information we have, this is the possibility that we see, that yes, so far as all the apples that you hurl up, they still keep on falling down, but maybe who knows that in some universe somewhere you throw an apple and then it doesn't fall back, it does something else. Who knows? You know, you can never disprove that. So the idea is that the partial knowledge is one thing, but this is a knowledge that integrates everything, that the root as well as the branches. You know the root how this root gives rise to the branches, and so the one who knows this knows everything. So Vedavit, that is the true knower of the Vedas. The knower of the Vedas means knower of all the knowledge. Veda means that knowledge, and Vedavit therefore is the knower of everything. You know everything. This is a tricky statement which many times gets challenged by people, very rightly challenged, that how such person can be called all knower, and can that person fly that curiosity on Mars? He may know about this, that all is Brahman, but can that person take that curiosity on Mars? No, maybe. Then how can you call that person all-knower? It is, the all-knower is told because this person sees that it is all sourced in the divine and other things are illusory. Now, whether it is a small illusion or a big illusion, whether it is the illusion of earth or illusion of Mars, what does it matter? It doesn't make much of a difference. And if that person really wants in some special event to take curiosity or whatever to Mars, that person can do it. So that is why these people, such person get called all knower. It is a beautiful discussion is there in Sri Ramakrishna and his divine life about this nature of all knowing. In Vedanta, these forms a very important question, that to know all is certainly an ingrained aspiration in everyone. I want to know everything. After a time, one discovers that it is impossible, and therefore confines oneself in a particular field, but still there is the desire to know everything. It keeps on putting its head out again and again, that yes, I want to know that too. Oh, that's very interesting. I want to know that too. In children, you will see where they have not lost the possibility. Still, they are hoping that they may be able to know everything tomorrow, maybe. When one grows up, say, at old age, had made many attempts to do that, now sees that, that's not possible. So, forgets about it. But this is an ingrained aspiration to know everything. And how can one do that? In one Upanishad, Mundak Upanishad, actually that Upanishad begins with this question, that how, what is that knowing which everything can be known? And then the answer is given very beautifully in the course of discussion, that know the self. Know self, and by knowing the self you will know everything. That is the thing that is worth knowing. Here also that idea will come, that is the thing worth knowing. Other things are not really worth knowing at all. They are all futile efforts. And we realize it in the course of our journey, that yes, I tried that. I tried to get lot of happiness from my relationship with this boy or with this girl or with... soon one comes to the conclusion that it was all a vain effort. It is, we see that after spending a lot of energy and lot of peace of mind is destroyed, then one learns it. But even one learning is important. By whatever process we learn, it is after all small price to pay as compared to the result. If one learns this, that's it. So, now this is, the wise people learn at a, at a lesser price. This Lord is telling that how you can easily learn it. Otherwise you will learn in course of time, sometimes maybe after getting millions of kicks, one may learn, but if you want to learn it with lesser number of kicks, then what? Then you want to learn with lesser number of kicks or more? So it is that then you can follow the scripture. So it is told that that is how one becomes all-knower. You know then and the all secrets of this universe. And how this further description of this tree of the universe, that adhashchurvam prasritastasya shakha गुणप्रविद्धा विषयप्रवालाः अधश्च मूलान्यनसन्ततानि कर्मानुबन्धीनि मनुष्यलोके. That this keeps this tree, if you look at its nature, the secondary growth keeps on all the time. That it is, you see that it has come from a root, but that root is not generally seen being underground or in this case far above in the skies. But you see the secondary causes all the time. what is this universe has this peculiarity. What one sees as result also becomes the cause of the next thing. You see a shoot coming up from the root. As it shoots up, again from that other two, three shoots start coming up. It is, and you see therefore this first shoot as the cause of these three shoots. Then each of these three shoots again go into three more shoots. Then some go down, some go up to keep the balance. You know, the tree has that program thing that as it goes up, it goes in all directions so that it will retain its balance. The center of gravity will be such that it will not fall down. So it throws the branches in all different directions to keep its stability. So some branches go down, some branches go up, it keeps on growing. There is a beautiful significance to it. The branches nurtured by the gunas spread below and above. Its shoots are the sense objects, and its rootlings are spread below, producing actions in the world of man, world of human beings. It is the branches keep on spreading. The tree grows and grows and grows. See this universe. Things grow. You want to stop, it doesn't stop. Keeps on growing. And we feel our works also are like that. Everything is prone to get further divided and grow. And grows very fast. Fast in the sense that it is what is called an exponential function. So the things grow very quickly to a level beyond one's comprehension. The growth is like that, geometric proportion, as they say. It is that is how this universe grows. Imagine, you know, one gives rise to two, each of them gives rise to two, then with a few steps you see that the figure becomes so huge, almost impossible to count. And that is how we see this universe expanding. It is never you can be contained, and yet it is all within the self. So in that sense it is finite. It is finite because it is in your brain. All that being in your brain, although it is huge, it can never exceed, the size of the universe can never really exceed the inner size of your brain. The size is a program in the brain. The size, the shape, the color, the smells, the sounds, they are programs. So this immensity of universe, it is infinite and yet limited. Limited by our brain. So that is how this universe grows in all directions. And what makes it go grow? Guna pravidha. By the three gunas, the combinations of the three, keeps on those permutations, combinations keep on going and make the tree grow in all directions. Still you do not find where is the beginning, where is the end, who am I, what is my connection with this person and that person, what is my connection with anything in the world, including this body. A thinking person comes really to that tremendous puzzlement that what is my connection with this body. I don't know that. I call it I sometimes. Sometimes I call it mine. There is a contradiction that if I don't say I hand, I say my hand. So till now, is this I or is this my? The two things are different. Mine is different from I. Those of you who attended the last weekend retreat on Dakshinamurti Stotram would see how beautifully this point was discussed during that retreat, that I and mine, they are two separate things, isn't it? That mine means not I. You say my house, not I house. My car, not I car. When it comes to body, the confusion becomes further very difficult to, you know, to separate these things. If you say nose, you will say my nose. I nose, no. You will not say, but if you, for every part of the body, you will say my, not I. But still the body as such is considered as I. What a funny thing, you see. Very difficult to fathom that on the one hand you call it my, and yet you call it I sometimes. This is a puzzle here. Tell one thing, clear, be clear. Is it mine or it is I? So, in our knowledge, this tremendous puzzle is always there. It is, I remember long back when I used to work in our dispensary there in Nagpur, I used to give the medicines the doctor would prescribe. I would then call the name, I would pack the medications and then call the name of the person and hand over. So I called the name of that girl, as the little girl came forward. She said, I had called, who is Rani? So she came, hey, I am Rani. Then I asked, well, who is Rani? She said, I am Rani. Then I pointed, is your nose Rani? She got confused. Your eyes Rani? You don't know. It is your hand Rani? It is, now she is child. She has the excuse of being, you know, a child. And the grown-ups also will land in the same confusion. Is it I or not I? It is. Therefore, this guna pravritta, it grows and causes so much confusion. We do not know, and that is, it will be described in detail in the next verse, but it says that all the secondary roots of this again go down. This tree has the roots, they are coming, and then they go down from the top again in the earth, and they keep on multiplying again. There are quite a few plants which do like that. Those big redwood trees, and they are like that. Those roots, and they will go down, and then again from that you will get more and more trees. So it is, the thing is, it is unending. That is how this world is. This mind goes on, you know, it never ends. It is, who is this person? She is my wife. And then who is this? You know, that is my child. And what is that? That is my child's child, my grandchild. It goes on to that. Then there are these relationships change, and thus you have many, many spreading, and ultimately things become so intricate and confusing that you say, oh, let it be, I don't want to know more about it. Enough. It is very difficult to fathom any of these things, that how something becomes mine. You say my car, how it became your car. Some time back you didn't call it my car. You went to the shop, did negotiations and then bought it and said my car. Now it became my car. Then you decided after a while that no, it is not, you don't want it. Then you sell it. Then it is no longer my car. You may call it my ex-car, like people refer to my ex-wife or my ex-husband. So like that, so my ex-car. So it is funny thing that it is, what was that my, just a connection mentally made, that's all, my. There is nothing my about it. It gets made like that. So, and what happens due to that? You get bound. The effect of it is important, that your freedom gets constricted, compromised, lost. You are bound. We get bound because of this mind. Mind is not just a harmless concept. The effect is that we get attached to those and thus lose our freedom. And that is why it is harmful. That it is, it causes our attachments to those things. That whatever little pleasure or pain we receive from it, to that extent we get tied. And don't think that only pleasure causes attachments. Pain also causes attachments. It is both. It is every sensation that we receive causes an attachment. The pain doesn't seem to cause attachment, but when one gets used to it, then that gets transformed into, you start missing it. It is, it causes a sense of attachment. So therefore, it is, one gets attached into this world, and that is the bandhana or the bondage, and it is a bondage for human beings. That is specifically mentioned here, karmani bandhini, karmanu bandhini, manushya loke, in the world of human beings, in the field of human beings. Why human beings have been mentioned? Because human beings are endowed with, or at least supposed to be endowed with, conscience. There is the idea of doing right and doing not right. And the bondage therefore comes because of this sense of right and not right. So, those other beings, they don't have any control over the actions. It is instinctive. The dogs and the cats, they are dragged by those instincts and accordingly they act. There is no instrument of conscience there. And so therefore there is no choice really. But human beings, they have a choice. It comes to us as a choice. Should I do this or should I not do this? Every human being feels this. And should I go this way or should I go that way? A choice comes at every step. What is right for me? Doing this is right or doing that is right? So, thus human beings, they build what is called the results of actions. They are bound by the results of their actions, by this sense. Because every human being is endowed with it, that sense of right and wrong, and also an underlying sense of like and dislike. So a combination of all this makes a human being bound. And when a person does something that is right, although he or she didn't like it, yet thought that it is right and does it. You see, just observe, when one does it, inside a thought comes, oh, I have done a good thing. I have done a good thing by suppressing my likes and dislikes for what was right. I did the right thing, and that generates what is called the bondage of good action. On the other hand, if you know something is right, but the likes and dislikes, they prevail. I don't like this, it may be right, I don't want to think about it at this time. So many times people say, well, I don't want to think about it. And we take pride in being a thinking species. So when we lock that, what we become? Not human being. I don't want to think about it. And go by what I like or what I dislike. Then when that action is done, you become aware. Nobody needs to tell you that you have not done something that is right. And thus you get what is called the result of bad action. There is no objective determining good or bad. It is this and this particular sense. And therefore, it is this idea, manushya loke, that in the world of human beings, and this very peculiar characteristic brings this religion to human beings. And therefore, the scope of transcending this and becoming free. We shall continue to discuss this idea in the next verse. Today the time is up. Any questions on what we discussed? Okay, so we shall conclude with the closing prayers. Before I recite the closing prayers, there is the announcement that on the last weekend of October, I think it is 27 Saturday, there is a day long retreat on dealing with ego, to be given by a very illustrious, wonderful teacher, Swami Ishtananda, from Vedanta Center in St. Petersburg, Florida. So those of you who would like to attend this retreat, please register either in the office, there will be forms, or you can also register online, and you can also pay here by credit card with $1 extra. So otherwise it is $20, but if you pay by credit card, then the credit card company charges us. So therefore, $1 extra if you want to pay by credit card. So, we shall conclude with the closing prayers now. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanya Shastra Vistare Ya Swayam Padmanavasya Mukhavarmadvinishrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantra Tasya Namanyani Karma Ekam Tasya Devasya Deva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.